Americans, here we are. We're starting a war. We claim the rest of the world can't have nukes.
Not Iran.
Well, the only thing on my TV screen is them retro days of Dukes.
What did she eat?
Well, the rest of the world is watching. Well, they probably dropped their jaw. It's over. She watched his ass with a Kyoto Pro.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the Guy James Show today. Glad to have you along with us today. I'm going to try and have an interesting show for you, although I have nothing planned for today. I thought I'd just take it easy on Friday. How about you? Actually, I have a couple of subjects ready to go today, but just been one of those days, it's been one of those weeks, been all these things happening all week long, got people visiting, and just been one of those times you didn't have an extra minute to spare, so we're still going to have a good show today, and especially if you give us a call today and give us your thoughts on anything we're going to talk about today, 866-546-5254, that's 866-546-5254, and that's, of course, toll-free. It's also toll-free if you live in the Washington, D.C. area at our D.C. Bureau, 202-370-6153, 202-370-6153, and our Phoenix Bureau at 623-444-5252. Glad to have you join in on the program today. Well, they're doing a lot of peddling, aren't they? God almighty, they get on the, I tell you, this deal about the telephone spying is just everywhere. Just absolutely everywhere. You can't, just one story after another, radio, TV. I heard even Limbaugh talking about it today. Of course, he was saying it was just fine with him that they would listen in on his phone calls. I wonder if it was fine with him if they would have listened in on his phone calls where he called his maiden or husband or whoever it was going out in the parking lot of the Denny's and buying the pills for him. Did he mind if they listened to those phone calls? He sure seemed to mind when they came into his house and looked at his doctor's record or whenever, wherever it was, and got his doctor record. He minded that. But he doesn't mind the phone call thing. He doesn't mind if they spy on you or me or anybody. That's okay. What a hypocritical bastard. Anyway, don't want to spend any time on Drug Junkie today. And one thing maybe one of you can tell me the answer to this today. I called Verizon today, since I am a Verizon customer. And a lot of people in the family and my friends have Verizon phones, and we talk to each other fairly often. And Verizon explained to me that this is landline only, got nothing to do with their cell phone. Do any of you know that? for sure. Does anybody, I mean, who, it's to the point, who do you believe? Do I believe Verizon? I heard a DOJ official say that it did involve cell phones, but Verizon says it doesn't involve their cell phones. Does any of you know for sure? If you do, I hope you'll give us a call and let us know, 866-546-5254. I'd like to know that, whether or not they're listening in on our cell phone calls. I have no idea at this point after hearing different stories from both sides, but Verizon said in no uncertain terms to me this morning that, no, sir, they do not have access to your cell phone calls. That's landline only. They said it's a completely different division, got nothing to do with one another. I wonder. I really do. What else today? Oh, I want to admit to being wrong. Always got to be man enough to admit when you're wrong. It's good to, if you're going to brag about when you're right, and I've done that plenty of times, I'll also admit to when I'm wrong. And I said that I didn't think Bush's popularity would get under 30%. Well, I'm wrong. New Harris poll got him at 29. So I apologize to all my listeners. I overestimated Bush, or I underestimated America's dislike for him, I guess you would call it. Some people would say hatred. I'm not the kind of guy that throws that word around a lot, hate, you know. I really don't use that word a lot. But Mike, if you're listening, I hate these bastards too. I really do. So that's the truth of the matter. Did you hear these two quotes? Our intelligence activities strictly target Al-Qaeda and their known affiliates. We're not mining or trolling through the personal lives of millions of innocent Americans. Junior Bush said that not long ago. And General Hayden says, and last week we cemented a deal with another corporate giant to jointly develop a system of mine data. Mr. Bush says we're not mining. General Hayden says we are mining. Wonder which one of those boys is telling the truth. Anybody want to guess? And looking over every all the other kind of things that went along with this story this week, could you monitor all these calls even if you wanted to? I mean, there'd be hundreds of millions, there'd be billions of calls. How do they do that? I'm not a techie, so I don't know what it is they're looking for exactly. Do they have sensitive electronic equipment to pick up certain words, or what? I'd like to know what that's all about. I really would. It's a mystery to me. I'm one of these people that still looks at the computers and they're just magic, you know. I don't know how they actually work. And I also had somebody send me an email that swears that when you signed your phone company contract, that you actually gave them permission to do this. And if we have any attorneys listening today, I'd like to know what you know about that. And speaking of attorneys, I have some good news. You know, in the program yesterday, we talked about Carol Fisher being jailed and being sent to the psych ward for a psych examination because of a political statement that she made. She got out of jail last night. She'd been released, I think, at around 10 o'clock last night, something like that. And there's going to be more news come out about that. You can check it out at worldcantwait.net, worldcantwait.net, and they'll let you know all about it. So that's a good thing. She's out of jail today, and I hope some of you had something to do with that, because I know they got tons of phone calls up in Cleveland and all that. So we'll get you the rest of the details as soon as we can, but I found that to be great news that Carol Fisher is out of jail today. At least she can take it easy for a day or so. I think her sentencing is on June 2nd, so good to know that she's not going to be in the pokey all that time. And I did see a story. My God, all of our friends up in Kentucky, we regularly hear from a few folks in Kentucky. Wow, what happened there yesterday? The governor was indicted on charges of conspiracy and misconduct. 13 of his top officials have been hit with 22 felony and 48 misdemeanor charges, including the state GOP chairman, the treasurer, the chief of staff, and transportation secretary. Something or other about getting people jobs for payola. Giving people jobs and buying jobs, in other words, what I've heard. But I did hear that they have some kind of a law in Kentucky that even before these charges were filed, the governor was able to pardon everybody even before they were charged. Boy, that's a nice deal if you can get away with it, isn't it? My, oh my, oh my. But it has been a busy week, but lately every week been absolutely crazy. You all know that. I've tried, but I haven't been able to keep up with the daily influx of information. There is an information overload right now. I have no staff to get, as a couple of people call it, stacks of material ready for broadcast every day. I don't have any writers. I don't have an engineer. Don't have a producer. No director. No one assigned to answer the mail and email. No one but me. So I do beg your indulgence if I miss a minor story now and then. I do the best I can, but these Bush people aren't making it easy, believe me. It's just hard to keep up. And, you know, after another week of absolutely astounding news, I sat down last evening and I tried to decide just what the topic of discussion ought to be today. There are so many stories out there, it's really hard to commit much time to any one item in the news anymore. But after sitting for a while and shuffling through a stack of information, I began to wonder, just who are these people running our government? I mean, sure, their names are Bush and Cheney and Rice and Rumsfeld and Rove and Bartlett and Bolton and some others, but who are they? I don't know, but maybe what are they might be a better question. It's almost come to the point that one has to wonder if this gang of incompetent, corrupt, and in many ways maniacal beings hadn't been sent here by some foreign government with the intent of conquering us from within. And I'm not kidding. This is 1984 stuff. And I know many of you have read 1984. I've got an intelligent audience here, well-read audience. George Orwell would be shaking his head in wonderment right now. He would. Because of his ability to predict the future, and many of his fictional ideas were taken to heart by this group and brought to fruition in ways George Orwell never dreamed of. And we can't call these people an American government because truly they are not in any sense of the word Americans. And I know some will argue with me over that, but what real American do you know that would just literally give the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States the finger? Huh? What real American, of all the amendments there are, you know, that's one of the most precious. And they literally are standing in front of the American public and giving them two fingers to the Fourth Amendment. What American do you know that would get in front of the cameras, look the people in the eye, and swear that this telephone spying by the NSA was limited to just 500 or so subjects and was only initiated when one of the calls came from outside the country, and then we find out it wasn't 500 or so subjects, it was a couple hundred million, and then we find out that it included almost all of us. You know, we find out that the President of the United States has been lying to us again. Only this time it's not about involving us in an illegal war, which in and of itself was a dastardly act by a man with no soul, no character, no sense of morality whatsoever. This time it was about throwing the Fourth Amendment right out the window. Fourth Amendment, you know, the way they look at it, what Fourth Amendment? Constitution, you guys think we should still follow that old outdated rag? And you know, Bush, you've seen him time after time. After all, I'm a wartime president. A wartime president. Do you hear me? War president. You people are a bunch of traitors because, you see, during a war, a president can do any damn thing he pleases. The president decides what's constitutional and what isn't. This is war. And we're saving you people from terror attacks. We've already prevented a bunch of terror attacks, and don't be asking about what attacks we prevented, because it's secret. In fact, we're keeping everything a secret from now on, unless we want to out a CIA agent because her husband opened his mouth when we don't want him to. Everything's a secret. No, sir, this is war. We need some secrecy because we're protecting you. That damn Fourth Amendment isn't protecting you. We are. I'm George Bush. I'm your savior. I'm your protector. I will decide what's right and wrong. Trust me, says Mr. Bush. I really believe that's how these people think. They are in control. They make the rules. They decide how and when to spy on whomever they please because they own the government, lock, stock, and barrel. And if you don't like it, just what are you going to do about it? I wonder if I'm sure most of you heard this story. Did you hear about the guy we picked up in Europe? Shipped him to Afghanistan, where he was beaten and tortured for about 6 months. And then they found out he wasn't the guy they thought he was, so they blindfolded him, flew him to Albania, and left him on a desolate hilltop to find his way back home. And then when he tried to find out just what the hell happened to him, our government told him and his lawyers that it was a secret. That he had no rights, and he could just go screw himself if he didn't like it. Well, that happened in Europe, but what makes anyone think they won't start doing it right here in this country any old day now? What would prevent you from thinking that? What is to prevent them from doing it? Tell me. They've got your phone records now after swearing they didn't. How can you believe a damn thing that comes out of any of their mouths right now? That's the part that just is astonishing to me. And I hear... I read in a Washington Post poll today that 63% or 64% of the American public think it's okay to spy on your phone calls. Can that be true? Can it really be true that 63% or 64% of the American people believe it's okay for them to spy on your phone calls? I have nothing to be ashamed of with my phone calls. I don't have any dark secrets in phone calls. But I don't want anybody listening into them, do you? Think of all the terrible things that could happen when Big Brother gets involved in your phone calls. Have you thought about some of the things that could happen? You could be telling, I mean, just crazy things. You might think they're crazy. You know, you might be telling a relative that you had pneumonia last week and you were sick in bed and all that. And Big Brother finds out, and next thing you know, the insurance company finds out and you get your insurance canceled. Crazy things like that. Can't get health insurance anymore because somebody spied on your phone call, and far more devious things than that. There are things going on in this country right now that I never dreamed of. And I'm telling you, if it's actually true that 63 or 64% of Americans think it's okay for the NSA to spy on their phone calls, we're screwed. If that is true, and I'm not kidding, I'm not overblowing this, if that poll is true and accurate, America as we know it is done for. What was it? You say, yeah, because he's protecting us from terrorists. Was it Ben Franklin? Who was it? It said those who would trade their freedom for a little temporary safety deserve neither. You're damn right. There's nothing more important than your freedom. And if it's accurate, if that is accurate, that 62 or 3 or 4, whatever percent it was, of the American people actually believe it's okay for the NSA and the Bush administration to spy on your phone calls, we're done for. And I don't think I'm overblowing that one little bit. If that is the truth, they have achieved the mind control that they want. Not only has the Bush administration achieved the mind control they want, the Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, the terrorists have won the war. And that's no BS. If that poll is true, we have lost the war on terror. If they have convinced, if the terrorists have convinced the people of the United States to give up some of their freedom because they're afraid of terrorists, they've won. They absolutely have won, and they'll keep on winning if they know they can intimidate the people of the United States in that way. And most especially if they think they can get the U.S. government to go along with it, too. Have you thought about it in those terms? I can't believe it. And it was not only the Washington Post, it was another major paper as well. Maybe the Wall Street Journal, I'm not sure. But I'm flabbergasted by that. I really am. And I know most of you are as well. Please, somebody tell me that that was a mistake. How many of you heard that Bush bootlicker, that Pat Roberts, senator from Kansas last night, said he knows the American people will approve of this phone spying thing if they understand it's going to protect them from terrorism. And I'll be damned, this poll comes out today and proves him right. I'm shocked at that. He said the Intelligence Committee had been briefed on the whole matter. And not 5 minutes before that, Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon, I believe he's from Oregon, had just been on the program and said he had been told nothing about it. He had not been briefed whatsoever. He was on the Intelligence Committee. And Senator Roberts said they had been briefed. Who the hell does this guy think he's talking to? I'll tell you who he's talking to. He's talking to the people who were foolish enough to put Junior Bush into the White House. That's who he's talking to. Those people will buy anything. And so he tells them, hey, look, we're just doing this little phone thing to try and find the bad guys. We're not listening to your phone calls, just the bad guys. We would never listen to your calls. That's what he tells these gullible people. If you're not guilty of anything, you have nothing to worry about. He failed to mention that poor sucker in Europe I just told you about that they picked up and beat and tortured and let him go in the middle of nowhere blindfolded after finding out he wasn't the guy they thought he was. And he failed to mention there's been dozens of guys let go from Gitmo because they were totally innocent. But don't worry, that could never happen to you. Who's buying this story? And you know, the government and Bush and all these people, and don't worry, it's illegal. We recognize that. And we're going to change the law and make it legal. It's illegal to bust down your front door in the middle of the night without probable cause and a warrant, but we can make that legal too. It's illegal to do any kind of a search and seizure without a warrant, but don't worry because we'll change the law. You see, we are the law. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, those are just old worn out ideas. We don't need them anymore. We're the Bush administration. We're the law. We're running the show now, and we will let you know what we decide is legal and what is not. But just for right now, just think of it this way. It's illegal for you, the citizen, to do anything we say is illegal. But it's legal for us to do whatever we want. Because we say so. That ought to explain it very clearly to everybody, don't you think? Please tell me that somebody listening has seen a retraction in the newspapers and said this isn't true about these polls. If it is, I've had a huge chunk of my faith in the American people ripped out of my heart if those polls are true. It just can't be. please don't let that be, that two-thirds of the people in the country think this is okay. I can't imagine. I just can't. Let's go to the phone. You're on the phone. Hi. Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
Was the light, did the light come on?
Yes.
I've been holding for several minutes.
Well, I know. We're doing the show, and I was talking.
I wanted to share with you how this poll was phrased. If another major strike against the USA was about to happen, and we could prevent it by tapping into the phone of one of the people suspected of being involved to prevent it, would you think that would be appropriate of us to do that? Now, that's the way they're asking.
Oh, my God. That's about as much of a push poll as I think I ever heard.
Exactly. So then they come out and interpret that we don't have, nobody has any objection to having their phones tapped. No, under that specific condition.
Dave, you want to read that again?
Well, I'm paraphrasing.
Okay.
It is, if a strike against the United States is imminent, and we could perhaps prevent it by tapping into the phone of one of the suspects, would you feel that that would be an all right thing for us to do?
Okay, so we got your wife and kids in the house cornered with a terrorist with a machine gun, and he's going to shoot them and he's going to shoot them within 10 seconds and let us monitor your phone lines. Jesus.
Under those conditions, a lot of people would say, "Why? I don't have a problem with that." Yes, tap into the phone.
Oh, my God. Is that what that said? Oh.
Yeah, I think if you ask people the question honestly, would you mind having your phone bugged by the government for their own political purposes, I think you wouldn't get 10% of the people.
Well, Dave, let me tell you, I went to a couple of friends today. And I said, let me tell you, I just read this poll in the Post, and I just want to ask you, do you mind if the government monitors your phone lines? I didn't give them any condition, like you just said. And both of them said, no, that's okay. That's okay. And then I started talking to them. I said, really? It's okay if they monitor, you're talking, like I said, a health issue or anything like that. And then they start backing it. Well, no, I wouldn't want them to know that. No, I wouldn't want them to know that, you know.
Mm. One of your big admirers is emailing me as we're talking here, thanking me for sharing this with you.
Well, I'm glad to know this. I really am.
Yeah.
Well,
I think you understand better. It's not just that America's gone all stupid. It is that they mislead you a bit, so slightly. Yeah.
That is misleading. Thanks for your call, Dave.
My pleasure, guys.
We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't anybody go anywhere. By the way, this is not a new song by Jackson Browne. It's a 10-year-old song. It's a new video that you got to see if you can.
I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year. With the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the you might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who send the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interests run. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own. Are the people who finally can't take anymore, when they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone. In their lives and the balance, there are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire. And
There's a shadow on the faces of the men who fend the flames of the wars that I fought in places you can't even say the names. They sell us the president the same way they sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion the same time they sell us our wars. I wanna know who the men in the shadows are. I wanna hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And never lie in the balance. There are people under fire. There are children at the cannons. There is blood on the wire. In the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are.
Oh yeah, Jackson Browne. Yeah, somebody reminded me yesterday that that's actually a 10-year-old song, but they just released it to a new video, and I happened to see the video, and it's a good one, by the way. If you get a chance to run across it on the internet, take a look. It's well worth viewing, believe me. Always liked a lot of Jackson Browne's work anyway. Give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We're going to talk a lot today about domestic spying. You know, we've got the new general now. And by the way, you want to read a scary article. What did I do with it here? I don't know whether it's Time or Newsweek. I didn't even look at the cover here. Time, the May 15th Time magazine. Got a big old story in here about one of my favorite men, John Negroponte. This guy... Well, you know, as I always say, if I were in the king of the world, the guy would be in prison and would have been in prison for some time now. It's where he deserves to be. Not ahead of the intelligence in the United States. He's one devious, no-good SOB. Quite a story about him in the Time magazine and how he pulled the rug right out from under Porter Goss at the CIA and how he's making the ultimate power grab. He is the czar of intelligence, and I think the name czar goes along so well with anybody in this administration. So he wanted to get the ultimate power. General Hayden is his trained monkey. They pulled the rug right out from underneath Goss, and that's what happened. The military's taken over, you see. Military's taken over everything. And that's in the Time May 15th issue. If you get a chance, you want to see it. It's only, what, just a two-page article. They cut down Porter Goss in there about as much as you could. Negroponte did, and this General Hayden. This Hayden guy, he scares hell out of me. He really does. At least Goss was harmless, I think. But... Negroponte, you all know his record, his human rights record. You see, Negroponte is one of those guys, if they build these confinement centers that they're talking about in the country here, prisons, for illegal immigrants and so forth, if a guy like Negroponte has his way, they'll have some mass graves outside them as well. And there'll be more than illegal immigrants end up in some of those holes and in some of those confinement camps or whatever it is he wants to call them. He's the type of man that he's no Colonel Klink, believe me. He's a guy with authority. He's the mastermind of this intelligence deal they've got going on right now, the power grab, and one nasty piece of work. I would not even want to be around the man at all. But I guess Porter Goss feels pretty doggone betrayed by this whole thing. The story is told that he knew that change was going to be made, that Goss did, and they wanted to let word out on Friday and let it simmer over the weekend so the press would find out gently, easily, and then in a few days they could have this smooth changeover with all of them getting together and shaking hands and smiling and all that. And Goss, to his credit, said, if you're going to do it, let's do it now. And he got it over with on that Friday. And there's a picture in Time magazine there of Goss and Bush sitting there, and it looked pretty painful for both of them, I must admit. But Goss has been around the block. He's been in politics a long time. He's a big boy. He can take care of himself. He had 16 years in Congress, and he was on the Intelligence Committee. That's how he ended up where he was in the CIA. He actually wanted Negroponte's job, but he didn't get it. And really, when Negroponte got that, Goss was the cornered rat there. He had no place to go. And so he's out. General Hayden's in. Going to be a man wearing a general's uniform running the CIA. I think the last one to do that was maybe Stansfield Turner back in the Carter administration. Didn't think it was right then. I don't think it's right now. CIA, important organization, but I don't know that I ever thought our government getting so involved in spying the way they have now. But, you know, someone sent me an email and said, if you don't like having your telephone records in the NSA database, you only have yourself to blame. You didn't read the fine print when you signed up. And he sent a little article along. It says, one government lawyer who's participated in negotiations with telecommunications providers said the Bush administration has argued that a company can turn over its entire database of customer records and even the stored content of calls and emails. Isn't that sweet? Because customers have consented to that when they establish accounts. The fine print of many telephone and internet service contracts includes catch-all provisions, the lawyer said, authorizing the company to disclose such records to protect public safety or national security or in compliance with a lawful government request. It is within their terms of service because you have consented to that, the lawyer said. If the company also consents and they do it voluntarily, the U.S. government can accept it. You see, you did it voluntarily. And when you voluntarily forfeited your right to privacy, your kindly government was forced to spy on you. This isn't the action of an administration worried about terrorism. It's the action of an administration worried about dissent from within. That is what you need to remember. They're not worried about the terrorism. Haven't they shown that? What indication have they shown that they're really concerned about terrorism? They had the number one terrorist, the number one man in the world they were looking for. From what I understand, had him all but cornered in the mountains between Pakistan and Afghanistan and would ultimately have gotten him. And what did they do? They called off the dogs, they pulled out the men and machinery, and went into Iraq. Are they that concerned with terrorism? If they are, I say it's for only one reason, is to protect their own asses. Political asses. That's all. These guys don't care if another attack occurs, just so it's not on their watch. That's all they care about. See, they're bragging now, well, we haven't had another attack since we took over. Since 9/11, no more attacks. I guess they've forgotten the ones overseas, the many that have taken place. The terrorists have not stopped their activity, and we have not stopped the terrorist. Not whatsoever. Don't kid yourself. These people, if these people had wanted to do a terrorist act of some kind in this nation by now, they would have. And they will. And we don't know when and we don't know where, but if anybody thinks that the actions the Bush administration has taken to stop it will stop it, you're kidding yourself. Our borders are open. There may be hundreds of them in this country for all we know right this moment. And besides that, we got plenty of Timothy McVeighs in this country to worry about as well. So, I don't think they're all that concerned. They've shown shown me nothing that they're that concerned about the whole thing. They really have not. 866-546-5254. We'd like to hear from you. You know, you look at Bush not so long ago, just a few short weeks ago, swearing that, no, there was only about 500. I think the number was 550 cases of the phone spying and so forth. He was swearing to that, saying, you know, that's all. That's all. And I, you know, if your actions look like those of a liar, if your words sound like those of a liar, and when they're put to the test of a liar, he fails that test, then what we have here is the President of the United States is a liar. Period. You know, likewise, if his actions are those of a dictator and his organizations is that of a dictator, then what we must have in our president is a dictator. And we know through his words and his actions that is exactly what he wants. If anybody's listening in right now that's not educated on the subject, do remember that Mr. Bush himself said that. Dictatorship wouldn't be so bad as long as I was the dictator. If that wasn't a Freudian slip, I don't know what was. You know, what's it going to take for the American people to rise up in righteous indignation and demand some sort of an accounting of this appointed leadership that we have? Will it take the imprisoning of immigrants in these concentration camps that they want to build? The wholesale arrest of people who have criticized this Führer's policies? Like this poor woman up in Cleveland that was thrown in jail? A political prisoner? Is that what it's going to take? Has this country become so complacent that as long as they can at least own cell phones and big TVs and garbage disposal, they believe they've got freedom? Is that what freedom means to people? It's utterly appalling to witness the daily, and it is drip, 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 daily disintegration of our Constitution by this second-rate hack president who's had 750 of these presidential signing bills. That should be proof enough that he thinks he's above the law. And that is the attitude of every petty dictator that's ever been known in this world. Every one of them had that mindset. And he is no different. He is petty, and he is trying to be a dictator. You know, I was talking to a friend this morning, and we were talking about the political aspects of George Bush's political history. Can you imagine if however many years it was, I know we've discussed this before in the program, but, you know, 15 years or so ago, Karl Rove says to a friend of his down in Austin, Texas, "Hey, you know what? I think I'm gonna talk to that Bush kid and see if he wants to be president." What kind of a comeback would you have had for that? You know, say, "Well, look, I know you made him governor, and Carl, and he only got him to be the governor because of his daddy's connections here in Texas with the oil and all that, and the really dirty campaign that you had against Ann Richardson. You only got him governor, but my God, Carl, be reasonable. First of all, you can't get him elected. And secondly, Carl, who the hell would want him as the president of the United States? That's scary. Wouldn't that have been the conversation?" And old Carl says, "Well, you know, maybe it is scary." And maybe he is a real dumbass, but I believe I can do it. What do you want to bet? Bet me $20. I'll bet you I can get him elected President of the United States. And he did. Selected. Is that how that conversation went? How could it have gone any other way? Let's be reasonable here. There couldn't have been a bunch of thinking men sat down at a big conference table in Austin, Texas, and Karl Rove lays this all out, and all these men sat here and go, well, you know, Karl, I think that's a great idea. What a worthy candidate he would be for President of the United States. Great idea, Karl. Let's do it. That can't have been the response. It had to be more like, well, yeah, let's look at the pros and cons of this. The cons, a lot of people are going to think he's just a dumbass, just a little puppet monkey, but that's okay, we don't care about that. The pros are, if we get him elected, you know he's dumb enough and gullible enough, we can get him to do anything we want him to. Yeah, Karl, let's go with it. I'll throw in a bunch of my other old buddy here. He'll throw in. Well, let's do this. We can do it. Because you know, Karl, if we do get this boy elected president, hell, you can shove him in the back room someplace. Anybody going to care what he has to say anyway? And why don't you get Cheney in there? Hell yeah, we all like Cheney. And, you know, he's been one of our pals for a long time, helped us all make a lot of money in the oil business and all. So just get Cheney in there. Kind of use Cheney as the, well, you know, like the Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen deal. Why don't you do that? Let Cheney be Edgar Bergen. That had to be how that conversation went. Had to be. Because there could not have been a bunch of high rollers in Austin, Texas. These men are bright. They've made a lot of money. They could not have sat down at the table and said, yes, sir, that man would make a fine president. Couldn't have happened. No way. Had to be what else I said. But, you know, he's been talked into this spying mess that we have now. I mean, this is an outrage. The NSA is by law, and I don't know how many of you have read it, they're excluded from monitoring domestic communications of America. So tell me, Bush, why is the NSA monitoring my domestic records and the records of millions of Americans? Why? I mean, you stop and think about this now for a moment from their standpoint, from Bush's standpoint and his crew. This is the criminal's dream. It really is the criminal's dream to have authority over whether or not your crimes are even investigated. Imagine that. That'd have been like Al Capone being the mayor of Chicago or being the federal judge in Chicago. Really. They bring a case in front of Al Capone about some of the henchmen robbing banks and running whores and doing everything. Well, no, I don't think this is worthy of a trial. That's the same thing that's going on right now with the Bush administration. And so I listened to all this last night. I read all about it. I hear all about it that I can. And I think this is it. This is it. This is the last straw. Americans are going to march in the street over this, and then I read in the Washington Post that over 60% of the American people think it's okay for the NSA to monitor their calls. I thought I must be dreaming. I'm glad Dave helped explain it, that this was definitely, if he had that exactly right there, this was quite a push-pull. I mean, you wouldn't, if those are the phrases they use, you wouldn't get more of a push-pull. A push-pull, for those of you, for you Republicans listening, is a poll where they ask questions so that they know the answers will come their direction. They push it their direction with certain questions. That's for all you Republicans. So, Bush thinks this is constitutional. He thinks it's constitutional. What I want to know, what if he decides, and he's the decider, you know, what if he decides that he'll run for a third term because he says it's okay. I'm serious. We're running into a constitutional crisis here right now. And so what if Junior Bush says, I'm going to run for a third term? Will 60% of the American people think that's okay too? Well, I don't think so, since he's down to about 29% right now. That's what really threw a monkey wrench into this whole thing last night. When I saw this Harris poll come out, I think I saw it about 2 a.m. this morning, 29%. And then I read it's 64%, I think it is, in WAPO, in Washington Post, said they went along with the spying. I thought, ooh, there's something wrong there. And Dave's explanation certainly puts it right. But, you know, just because this administration claims something is legal certainly doesn't mean it is. There's no oversight, judicial or congressional, to make that objective decision. And I'm appalled that more people aren't outraged over this behavior. In the name of the war on terror, this administration, with the complicity of the mainstream media, has actually perpetuated such a state of fear in the American public that these people are getting away with the erosion of our constitutionally guaranteed freedoms. It is sickening. Well, you know, you look at it, I guess tens of millions of Americans haven't said that they're not with the terrorists, so they must be with terrorists, right? I mean, that's the logic these people use. And, you know, those cells down at Gitmo, they seem clean and newly painted. I don't know, though. I've seen those uniforms. I look terrible in orange. Does anybody know if the Halliburton detention camps, maybe they'll offer green or no, and please no jumpsuits. I prefer black, I think. And as usual, you know, I couldn't go very long without talking about the Democrats. As usual, that sound you hear coming from Washington is the collective bending over of the Democrats as they touch their collective toes and promise to change all the laws so that the program can fit within the law. You know, without a spine, the Democrats can bend over without much effort these days. Man, I'll tell you, the problem with the program, however, is that it's highly subject to abuse. And who in the world would think these people wouldn't abuse it at every opportunity? I will guarantee you, you give a guy like Negroponte personal information about Americans, certain Americans, and he's going to use it. He is going to use it. These guys make Richard Nixon look like an amateur. You know, we already have heard that they've got dossiers on about 10,000 of their political enemies. Does anybody think that this wouldn't be wide open for abuse? Even the most level-headed, nonpartisan person listening to me right now thinking, well, you know, I don't know. I don't have anything to hide. They can listen to my phone calls because I have nothing to hide. How would that make you feel? Wouldn't it make you feel like you've seen in the movies with these people going to visit somebody in jail, and you got a glass in between you, and you're listening to somebody, you know, they're both listening on a phone, and you know that the prison guards are listening to you? How would that feel if you're having a conversation with your mom or your grandma or your son or your daughter or your loved one, your sweetheart? You're having an intimate, private conversation, and you know Big Brother's listening in. But he's listening in to keep you safe, you know. Hell, I think I'd go back to tin cans and string. Of course, they could tap that string, couldn't they? They'd tie another string to it and go that way. But, yeah, you know, as I started to say, the real problem with this program, it's so highly subject to abuse, and given this administration's track record of going to to lengths to discredit people that, that it perceives as some sort of a threat to their agenda. It's not hard to imagine that those in power can decide that, that Citizen A is a threat, fix up some records from this database, and then have that person arrested, prosecuted as a terrorist, or worse, held indefinitely as an enemy combatant. You laugh? You think that's too far out? Do you? Don't forget, if you think that's too far out, don't forget we told you about a lady yesterday that was in jail in Cleveland in a psych ward, woman with no mental illness problems, no history, put in a psych ward because the judge didn't like the political statement on her T-shirt. And people trust the government not to abuse this NSA spying program? Are you kidding? Surely you're not serious. So they get somebody they really don't like. You know, there's some talk show host out on the left that I'm sure they don't like. I know they don't like some of them. They probably like me. Because I've, as I mentioned today already, I've said some nice things about Georgie's mother. And that would endear me to him. And she is an old bat, and I don't care. But they decide they don't like you. They find some phony charge, catch you for jaywalking, to make you look like a terrorist, throw your ass in jail, you end up in Gitmo, and whatever happened to him, I don't know. But he's an enemy combatant. We found out that he's a terrorist, and he's gone. Might never hear from you again. Crazy, you say? Considering the related story that the Justice Department is dropping its investigation into the warrantless wiretap program because the NSA refused to grant clearance to the investigating attorneys. Now, this is a new one. The NSA refused to grant clearance to the investigating attorneys of the Justice Department. From what I could find out today in Washington, from a Washington attorney, that's not according to Hoyle. That can't happen. But it did. You know, I could foresee a scenario just like I just described, and the accused having no way to show otherwise because the NSA, you see, would refuse to let anybody see the records. It's a frightening, frightening situation that anyone, liberal, conservative, moderate, or what have you, really ought to be terribly concerned about. It's the first step, folks. The first step, maybe the second step. You know, I think along about Monday or Tuesday, I related a story to my listeners about a lovely German couple I met over the weekend. Terrific people. Very astute politically. Not just about politics in this country, but all over the world. Very, 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 very astute, unlike many Americans. Americans just don't seem to give a damn. A lot of us don't care what goes on in the rest of the world. I do, and I know most of my listeners do. But both of these people, this young couple, both of their parents had been in the army in the Second World War. And told the story to their children of just how it happened. They're minding their own business, living their lives. And all of a sudden, old Mr. Schickelgruber comes along and warns them about these bad people. And creates a boogeyman. And created hate toward those people. And start having rallies and marches and torches at night and thousands of big flags, colorful flags and people marching in the street. And people got caught up in it. At first they thought it was wrong. They thought this man maybe doesn't know what he's talking about, but gee, my neighbor's involved. Maybe I should get involved. and the propaganda machine took over, and the rest is history. Think it can't happen here? Think again. Let's not let them go any further with this. Let's put a stop to it here and now. Let's raise our voices. Let's raise our voices loud enough that they can't deny us, that they have to listen. This is our government. It still is. Maybe for a little while longer. But let's make ourselves heard over this. We must. If you love this country, we must. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back. Don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. In Washington, law enforcement officials have executed search warrants on the home and office of Lyle Dusty Fago, the third highest official at the CIA, who's under investigation over ties to a defense contractor linked to a Capitol Hill bribery inquiry. Fago has already resigned his position. In Nigeria, more than 150 people have been killed when a ruptured pipeline exploded as local villagers were flocking to the area to scoop up fuel. A similar tragedy occurred 2 years ago and in 1998 when 1,000 people died under the same circumstances. President Bush's job approval rating has hit a new low. The latest Harris Interactive poll shows 29% of the public saying that he's doing a good job. That's down from 35% in April. Expected to pass this month, allowing illegal aliens to eventually become U.S. citizens. CIA director nominee General Michael Hayden is defending the secret surveillance programs he oversaw while head of the NSA as lawful and designed to preserve the security and the liberty of the American people. His visits to lawmakers on Capitol Hill were complicated today by reaction to yesterday's news that the NSA has been collecting millions of Americans' everyday telephone conversations and phone records. In Iraq, four Marines were killed when their tank rolled off a bridge into a canal west of Baghdad, and three soldiers have been killed by roadside bombs in separate incidents in Iraq. At the United Nations, Secretary General Kofi Annan is criticizing what he calls Iran's aggressive stance in the international standoff over its nuclear program. But he says the U.S. must talk directly to Iran about its disputed nuclear program because Tehran will not negotiate seriously without Washington's involvement. Meanwhile, unnamed U.N. diplomats say the United Nations Atomic Energy Agency has found traces of highly enriched uranium at an Iranian site linked to the country's defense ministry, but they caution that even if confirmed, that uranium may have been imported. In California, the state Senate has passed a bill that would require school textbooks to include contributions made by the gay community and bar educational materials that put homosexuals in a negative light. But the bill does face strong opposition in the state assembly. And in Oregon, a sheriff has sent a bill to Mexico for nearly $320,000. He says that's the amount it costs to jail 360 illegal immigrants in his county. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The U.S. trade deficit narrowed unexpectedly in March by $3.5 billion, helped by a decline in imports and increase in exports of commodities and business equipment. Organizations representing thousands of attorneys are challenging the nation's tough new bankruptcy law, saying it illegally restricts the advice lawyers can give and makes it harder for clients to navigate the bankruptcy system. Congress has sent the president the $70 billion tax package that will extend tax cuts on capital gains and dividends for 2 years. He's expected to sign it in the next week. And Texas officials say they plan to begin operating the largest offshore wind farm in the U.S. within 5 years. The farm will be built in the Gulf of Mexico. It's expected to generate enough power for 125,000 homes, but some environmentalists say the spinning blades could injure or kill birds migrating to and from Mexico or Central America. To help protect consumers from severe price spikes at the gas pump, the head of Gulf Oil LP says he's working on creating price cap and price locking systems. Light sweet crude now stands at $72.30 a barrel. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen 94 points this hour. The NASDAQ is down at 25, and the S&P 500 is off by 11 points. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back. Glad you stayed with us during the news. I see a lot of you, well, everybody stayed with us during the news. Almost everybody. What do you think about that story? Are you enough of an environmentalist? I'm an environmentalist. I'm not one of these, you know, off the left end of the scale ones, but I am an environmentalist, being a farm guy in my young life. I think many, if not most, farmers revere the land and look up themselves as stewards of the land. But don't you think it's a little bit maybe too far out to be such an environmentalist that you're worried about these big hydroelectric blades killing birds that might be flying past and generating blades? I don't know. I mean, we fly airplanes. That happens with airplanes. And that happens with power lines. It happens with glass windows. But they want to put this big air turbine farm out in the Gulf somewhere, I guess it is. I don't know. I think a bird's going to have to take your chances with that anyway. Hey, I hope you'll give us a call. 866-546-5254. A typical quiet Friday here at the Guy James Show. 866-546-5254. I guess I haven't been so quiet. But, you know, I found something that, you know, it seems like these days a lot of things disturb me. But I'm a numbers guy, and I found some numbers the other day that just threw me for a loop, and I wish I could understand this. In the latest New York Times CBS poll, 46% of the people that responded said they approve of the way that Bush is handling the campaign against terrorism. Okay? 46% say they approved the way Bush is handling the campaign against terrorism. But here's the clinker. But only 29% approve of the way he's handling the situation in Iraq. What is up with that? Does that show that the poll is just completely worthless? Are people really that screwed up about this that about half of America think he's handling the campaign against terrorism okay, but 29% approve the way he's handling the situation in Iraq? Hell, Iraq is terrorism. I don't know. I just don't understand it. I really don't. Well, what exactly do they think of people is the difference? You know, and you stop and think about it. 46% of the people, you know, approve the way he's handling the campaign against terrorism. Tell me, what has Bush, not him personally, but his administration, because he personally hadn't accomplished anything ever. But what has Bush accomplished in the war on terror, other than attacking a sovereign nation that posed no threat to us and had no connection to the perpetrators of 9/11, and then you know, and then he ineptly handled the aftermath at a cost of now thousands of American lives and hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer dollars. You know, okay, give him some credit. The Afghanistan venture seemed to be successful at first, but now the Taliban, you know, they've resurged. The warlords have got control of that country again. Heroin production's up to record heights. I guess there's no place in the capital except Kabul that's safe to travel. And that's, you know, that's the only justifiable action Bush has undertaken, and it was abandoned for the unjustifiable and totally unconnected Iraqi venture. Has Osama bin Laden captured? I mean, I want to know why people, 46% think he's handling this war on terror. Has he achieved the number one objective? Has he got Osama bin Laden? No. Have the number of acts of terrorism been reduced? No. That's from his own State Department. In fact, they rose sharply in 2005. Has the Bush administration brought substantial numbers of terrorists to justice? Other than this joker, Zacharias Moussaoui, can you name one dangerous terrorist that's faced an American court of justice? One. Please, somebody give me one. Has the administration secured our borders, our ports, our transportation centers? Has it even implemented the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? No. The answers to all those questions are no, 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 and no. So what exactly are these 46% giving Bush credit for? Do they think he's, you know, they're giving him credit for curtailing our civil liberties? For demonizing people who have been dissenting? For bankrupting the Treasury? What are they giving him credit for? I thought about this, and I can only conclude that the administration talking point, you know, we're fighting them over there so they won't attack us here, it must work at some level. Since there's been no al-Qaeda attack within our borders since 9/11, but you know, as that famous philosopher Donald Rumsfeld once said, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. There were 8 years between the World Trade Center attacks of 1993 and 2001, years in which al-Qaeda spent in carefully planning so the next attack would be spectacularly successful, which it was. God help us if the same cycle repeats itself. That put the next attack at 2009, the year after Bush leaves office. You know, when you stop and consider the ineptitude and the total incompetency of this administration, does anyone seriously believe terrorists won't strike again because Bush has successfully waged the war on terror? None of that explains those numbers to me. 46% say they approve the way he's handling terrorism, but only 29% approve the way he's handling the war in Iraq, and now only 29% approve the way he's handling the entire job of the presidency. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to give us a call, and I hope you do. You know, I'm one of those people who has to have an answer for everything, and I don't care what it is. I need a reason for it, the origin of it. Thank God for computers. I'm always looking up everything I need to know of. Whatever it is, I need to know the answers. It's hard for me to go to bed at night wondering what the answer to something is unless I find out what it is. Some things are just not answerable. But there are several things that I've wondered about my entire life, and I'm now pretty sure that I'm going to go to my grave without the answers. The end of creation, where is it, how far is it, what is it, you know, those kind of things. We all think about that. And along with all of you, I'll never find out the answer to those questions, and I'm pretty doggone sure that in my lifetime, I'm never going to find out if there's life as we know it somewhere besides on this planet. When I was a kid, I was pretty doggone sure we'd find the answer to that one in a few years, but my hopes beginning to fade on that one. And there have been a lot of things I've wondered about for my entire life, but just in the last 3 or 4 years, there has arisen a phenomenon that was driving me absolutely crazy. And some people say I made that juncture a long time ago, but it's taken me a few years worth of study and lots of deep thought about it, and I think I now have the solution. I think I would have come up with the reasons for this phenomenon sooner, but the obvious answers were so very unpleasant that at first I just didn't want to accept them. But now, sadly, I know my answers are true and they're valid. And as you probably know what I'm getting to, the question that perplexed me so much is, how could anyone possibly have ever supported the regime of George W. Bush? And I just don't limit it to Bush himself, because I know his aims, his thoughts, and his values are shared by a good many Republican leaders. But knowing all we know about Bush and his administration, how could about a third of the American people support him no matter how poorly he performs? And now it's a little less than a third, down to 29%. How could 29% of the people support him, even now? And, you know, here's what I come up with. First and foremost, I believe that we've been indoctrinated into being some sort of a militaristic society. To be sure, our military's involvement over the years has protected us from destruction. You know, we wouldn't be here without the successes of the Revolutionary War and, you know, slipping the bonds of good old evil King George, and then defeating the British again in 1812, and, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and San Juan Hill and the Spanish and the Germans twice, and our own slaughter fest, the Civil War. And when you throw in Vietnam and Korea and what else, Afghanistan, Iraq twice, and the huge military buildup during the Cold War against Russia, and don't forget Grenada. We've been really busy. For a young nation, we've been extremely busy. We never have passed on a good fight. And I'm not saying that because I think all war is wrong. Now and then it's got to happen, despite the best efforts to prevent it. But militarism is important in our society, and I think Bush and his cronies have capitalized on that fact in spades. You know, I'll save you from the evil Saddam and from the evil Bin Laden and the Axis of Evil. And Bush knew what he was doing when he stoked the fires of war with those names. He really did. And America said, oh, yeah, yes, sir, let's go after him. And so I think those 29% or so of Americans who follow and seem to worship Bush are just plain greedy. They're greedy because when the Republicans stand up and say, we're going to let you keep more of your money because we're going to lower your taxes, they bought it. Oh, man, did they buy it. And, you know, there's a few little details that the greedy ones never seem to think about when they hear promises of tax cut. Who's going to pay for everything? We need the roads. We need armies. We need infrastructure, courts, jails, meat inspectors. We need our commercial airplanes inspected. We need money for disasters like Katrina, the forgotten Katrina. We need money for schools. We need tax money, and somebody's got to pay for it. But the Bush people promise everybody tax cuts during war, and those 29% are saying, oh, yeah, hell yes, give us tax cuts. Never mind if we got to borrow the money and send our kids, you know, send them to the poorhouse. Never mind if we sell our economy to foreign nations. Never mind if we build bridges in Alaska that cost $250 million to benefit 50 people or so. Cut our taxes. And I think you're finding out with this latest renewal of this tax cut just how much people's taxes get cut. Yeah, the millionaires' taxes are getting cut. Joe Smith down the road of average income getting about, what is it, anywhere between $9 and $20 off. He said, ooh, that's a big deal. But it's good old-fashioned greed. Good old American-style greed. Greed like no other nation on earth has experienced. And anyone who wants to tax you to help pay for the things I just mentioned is a damn socialist communist pig. That's just the way the Republicans look at it. And third on my list of reasons that 29% of Americans will support Bush no matter what is just pure old-fashioned racism. And I know a lot of you cringe when I say that. You hate it when someone says that, right? What is he talking about now? Racist? We right-wingers? Racist? Yes, sir. And I mean it. Not all of them, certainly. But don't you think for one moment that part of the reason that the solid South for the Republicans right now is so solid, don't you even consider for a moment that part of that is because of good old-fashioned racism. I'm not talking about any ancient history here. I'm talking about the last 25 years or so. The right wing's patron saint, Saint Ronald of Reagan, he pandered to the racist in the South when he ran for office. It was Ronald Reagan himself who promoted the fallacy of the welfare queens in the big city having 12 kids and living in a big fancy house and driving a new Caddy on a taxpayer dollar. You remember that story? Yeah, and they go to the grocery store and they got $1,000 worth of food stamps and I could only afford $15 worth of groceries and get out there in my own used car and that black woman and her 12 kids, they had a new Cadillac. Why, it's terrible. You remember that story. He used that to get the South to vote for him. And let's not forget good old Trent Lott's comments that got his feathers plucked just a couple of years ago. And, of course, there's no better example of blatant racism than Bill Bennett and Rush Limbaugh. Both of them revered in right-wing America. They may hate me for saying it, but racism is a very big reason that 29% of Americans will follow Bush and his regime to the very ends of the earth. And while I'm at it, pissing people off, there's a number four in my list of reasons. And number four for that reason is people's, is homophobia. Bush and his people like the normal demons I usually mention, Falwell and Robertson and Dobson, and plenty of other charlatans in pulpits all over America, are homophobes extraordinaire. They really are. Because they preach that message week after week after week, and they don't mind saying that those queers are going to ruin the sanctity of marriage. Never mind that the people of the aforementioned so-called men of God have got a higher divorce rate than those at that of the general public, but those queers are the one who are going to ruin marriage, by cracky. You let them get married and they'll want benefits and such, just like normal people. You let them get married and they'll do it. Those queers are going to ruin our country. Yes, sir, homophobia is alive and well in right-wing America as well. And finally, I couldn't wrap this up without saying something about religion. Bush, he's a godly man, you know. Yes, sir. Bush says God speaks to him all the time. Why, he even told some foreign leaders that God told him to smite old Saddam, and he goes to church, you know, and he said Jesus is his favorite philosopher, and only a deeply religious, godly man would say that, right? And he became a Christian, and he saw the light, and he's been righteous ever since that experience, and because he's such a godly man, he would never lie to the American people. He would never try to ruin the reputation of a former ambassador by outing his wife, who happens to be a covert CIA agent. He would never take us to war based on lies. Of course not, because he's a deeply religious, godly man. So, you know, these are some of the reasons I come up as to why about, what is it now, 29% of the American people will allow G.W. Bush to piss on their shoes and tell them it's raining and they'll believe it. I might have thrown good old stupidity in there for good measure, but these five are the main reasons our nation's being led to ruin by a man and his administration who are so disconnected from the real world. And those 29% who still follow him are so disconnected from the real world as well. There may be a lot of adjectives you could use to describe me, and those who are worried about the future of this country under the rule of people like Bush, but don't ever call me a lemming, because I'm not one, never have been, never will be. Don't care who's in power, doesn't matter to me. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It's wrong for everybody. And I sometimes think I'm not fair to everybody when I talk about Republicans. You know, so often I make the distinction that there's Republicans and then there's those others. And I think the 29% that are left are the others. I don't think they're real Republicans. I often say that the Republicans have never done anything for this country, and I'll stick to that. They're, as the old saying goes, Franklin Roosevelt said a Republican is somebody with two perfectly good feet that doesn't know how to walk forward. And for all intents and purposes, that's been true with their governance over the years when they've been in power. They've really always wanted to just stay at the status quo. I believe if Republicans had been in charge of industry in America, instead of industry being in charge of Republicans, I think it probably would have stifled invention and technology and everything else, and we'd be living back in the dark ages. And make no mistake about it, people like Falwell and Robertson probably would live up in Salem, Massachusetts, and be dunking people under the water to see if they were witches or not. That's the kind of Republican some of them are. But there are a lot of good Republicans. Good, hard-working people, and people that come from good stock, and people that live in middle America, the good old Midwest that I'm so familiar with. And I had a conversation the other day with somebody, and I'm talking about the economy being bad, and this person is telling me, well, no, it's pretty good, and I know, you know, everybody in our area here is doing real well, and you know, we're not having such a bad time. And one of the reasons that we're not having such a bad time is, you know, people kind of in rural areas and all, we kind of take care of one another. If Joe down the road's having a problem, somebody's there to help him. They'll help him get a job. They'll help him out. It's one of the wonderful things about being brought up and living in a small community. The word community really means something. And so people do help one another and go to each other's aid. A lot of great small communities like that around the world, around this country, especially around the Midwest. I'm partial to that area, but all over the country. But I guess what I'm getting at there is, let's take Ohio, for example. I'm familiar with Ohio. A lot of these small communities now have voted Republican for a long, long time. When I was a kid, Ohio was a Democratic state. But they've voted Republican for a long, long time now. Have they voted Republican because they're better off now? Have they asked them Reagan's question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? I can tell you, in the great state of Ohio, most people, certainly not all, but most people economically, when asking themselves in the great state of Ohio and the Midwest, are we better off now than we were 4 years ago? The answer is no. An unequivocal no. Yes, there are a few who are prospering, and good for them. I'm glad for them. But people are not better off than they were. Most definitely not. But they still voted for Republican in the last election. Why? Because of the Republican propaganda machine that caused these people to look away from the actual problems, to look away from the economic problems and the social problems, to completely look away from that. And the old three-card Monty, the old shell game. Don't look over there, look over here. We got gays wanting to get married. We got abortion on every corner. And people bought it. And they voted Republican for those reasons. And except for those two reasons, and tax cuts. Except for those three reasons, these people live like Democrats, and always have, and probably always will, because they live for the community. They live for the greater good of the community. They prize their community. They live like Democrats and vote like Republicans because the Republicans have snookered them with the abortion issue and the gay marriage issue. They dangle those out there like, oh, look at this. Look at this. This is terrible. These queers want to get married. Don't look at the fact that the Timken Company is closing up most of their plants in Ohio and there's thousands of jobs going bye-bye. Don't look at that. Look over here at these queers getting married. Don't look at the fact that industry in Ohio is sliding right out the door and nobody's doing anything about it. Don't look at that. There's an abortion going on in every corner, and so these good people have been snookered by these arguments, which the Republican leadership has done nothing about and will never do anything about because they don't give a damn about those issues whatsoever. They only pull them out at election time to get some votes. Have the people in those areas not figured that out yet? Have they not figured it out? Have they realized that those two issues alone, that gay marriage and abortion, has caused them to vote Republican for all this time for so many people? Not all of them, but enough to tip the scales and make them red states. But things are going back now. I see tremendous deficits for the Republicans in those areas now. I don't have the exact figures in front of me right now, but I know in many of the states there, Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, you're looking at the Republicans having lost serious double figures. 21%. Let me see if I have that here. Maybe I don't. No, I don't. I had a map with that on. But, you know, they've lost like 21% in Ohio, 17% in Pennsylvania. I mean, they're losing and losing bad. But they're going to start any day now getting serious about the midterm elections and throwing a lot of money at it. And mark my word, they're not going to talk about the loss of jobs in Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania and Illinois. They're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about gay marriage and abortion and those great tax cuts they got you. That's what they'll talk about, most certainly. Well, gee whiz, it's the bottom of the hour, and we need to take a little break. So let's just do that, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
President stood in front of the jet planes. The rubble's all settled and democracy reigns. We defeated their army, taken control, dropped thousands of bombs and they've taken their toll. The oil's on fire, just like the blood of a billion Muslims dragged through the mud. And the world is safer with the dictator gone, and their lot will improve with our corporate pawn. The war is over. That's what he said, go back to your business. We've buried the dead and the war is over. Fatherless children have taken the street. All that remains is the sting of defeat. Homes are in ruins, cancer is rife. For soldiers and newborns, the end of a life. Kids grown up with just hunger and fear. But lo, behold, the Yankees are here. Now all you people are gonna be free. Cause this land was made for Chevron and me. And the war is over. That's what he said, just turn on your TV. We've buried the dead and the war is over. The government files are all up in flames. His victims of torture, who remembers their names? The past doesn't matter, but the future is bright as the Exxon refinery lights up the night. History's looted like the library's shelves, but we'll fill them with Bibles, be proud of ourselves. Turn your schools into compounds, make room for us all. If you're missing your legs, you can learn how to crawl. The war is over. That's what he said, forget it all happened. We've buried the dead and the war is over. And the price was worth it, yeah, we'd do it again. With bombs or with sanctions, kids, women, and men. Cause we have national interests and they must be met. We will enforce them by treaty or jet. And when time has passed and we've had some rest, we'll find a new villain, cause that's what we do best. Maybe a sultan or a grandson of Mao, but don't trouble your conscience, because as of now, the war is over. That's what he said, just put it behind you. We've buried the dead and the war is over.
And that song's over, and we're back. Hey, I found my notes I wanted to talk about this, some of these statistics that I love so much. And I think you're going to find these interesting, too. Maybe some of you already know them. But I've got in front of me the very latest approval rating of G.W. Bush. And there are only four states in the country. You know what that map looked like, that red-blue map. You know what that looked like before. There's only four states right now where he has a majority of 50% or more. Four states. And guess where they are? Well, you might guess where they are. They are, first of all, Utah, of course. Idaho, of course. Wyoming, of course. And Nebraska. Idaho, Nebraska, Utah, and Wyoming. And I might add this, that Nebraska's only at 51%, Idaho's at only 53%, Utah's at 55%, and Wyoming's 54%. Utah had him somewhere around 70% in the last election. And the other thing to keep in mind, that in these four states, although large states, they're barely 2% of the people of this country. 2%. So the only four states that are pro-Bush right now, that give him more than 50%, represent 2% of the population, barely 2% of the population in the United States. That's what it looks like right now for them. And going over what I was talking about states losing popularity for Republicans for Bush right now, Kentucky, minus 21%. Indiana, minus 21%. North Dakota, amazing. North Dakota and Montana, minus 20%. Both of them down 20% for Bush. And there's a lot of other states where he's lost tremendous numbers as well. There's a lot of other states where he's lost between 15 and 19% of his support. And, you know, take a look at some of the other states, his popularity. Connecticut, never very popular in Connecticut, but 27%, Delaware 27%, Illinois 29%, Massachusetts 26%, New Jersey 28%, New York 24%, Rhode Island 24%, Vermont 27%. And in case you're wondering how he's doing back in the good old Lone Star State, his own state, people, a two-term governor and a two-term president of the United States, claims to be from Texas. He's clinging to a dismal 45% approval rate in his home state and has lost 17% of his support since 2004. Hell, he might not even be able to go back to Crawford, Texas after he's impeached, you know? They might not want him. He may have to cross the border. Down and cross the Rio Grande, George, and just get out, period. That would suit me fine. We were talking about the tax cut a minute ago. The tax cut bill that the Senate and House leaders have generally agreed upon right now is expected to save Americans at the center of the income distribution level an average of $20 each. Huh? $20. There's two boxes of popcorn and a Coke each at the movie. Huh? $20. Man, I gotta sit down and take some time and figure out what I'm going to do with that 20. Wow. However, and you knew this was coming, the top 10th of 1%, whose average income is $5.3 million, will save an average of $82,000 each. And those who make up the great majority of Americans who make less than $75,000, which includes 75% of all taxpayers, would save at most $110 each. Those making $1 million save on the average of $42,000. Let's just take that $75,000 figure and let's multiply it by 10. That's what do we got there? By 14 or so? Yeah, that's about right. 10 times would be 15. Let's say 15 times. If you're making 75 grand right now, you're going to save about $110 on your taxes. Whoop-dee-doo. So if you made $1 million at that rate, you save about $1,500. But oh no, it doesn't work that way. Those making, you know, at the same rate, what I'm talking about here. So those making more than $1 million would save on the average of $42,000. So the percentage wise, they're making $1,500. I don't know. 10 times more, percentage-wise. It's absurd. I mean it's absurd. And yet, there's a lot of people going to go around saying, hey, you know, that George Bush, he cut our taxes. Man, he cut our taxes. Am I happy about that? I am really happy about that. He cut our taxes, and of course, he doesn't like abortion, and he's a good Christian, and he doesn't like those gays getting married. So, let's elect him again. Well, I guess he could get elected in Utah, maybe as governor of Utah. I don't know. Maybe he'll move there. I'm not sure. I wish he'd move anywhere but around here. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to call, we'll listen to what you have to say. We really will. I think we're going to take a quick break. Don't go away.
I had a dream the other night. Now in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich. How much can we take? How much can we give? How much is too much and how much longer can we live? As we turn our backs, turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. War, how many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare and revive the American dream? If we blindly stay the course, this horse will drown us in the stream. Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up our eyes. Let's take our heads out of the sand and finally realize that our tomorrows will depend on what we do today. Don't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
Now the political
That's a fact. Hey, glad to have you back with us, back for the last, what do we got here, about 16 or 17 minutes left of the program yet. Got a nice email from a friend of ours, from, John, and thought I'd read you some of it. He goes to tell about the new poll being at 29%, and mentions that also wanted to tell you that Rolling Stones has an excellent article in it about why Bush will go down as the worst president ever, and answers the common excuse right-wingers use. Well, all professors analyzing him are liberal. And, you know, this is a good argument here John makes. All the professors analyzing Bush are liberal. John goes on to say, do you ever think how it is that anything to educate you, Republicans tell you not to listen? Teachers, don't listen to them. They're all liberal. Professors, don't listen to them. They're all liberal. And the news, don't watch it. They're all liberals. And John goes on to say, I also saw our good friends Mr. Hannity and Mr. North on TV denouncing Howard Dean for not condemning those protesters at the funerals of soldiers. The only problem is those protesters are a conservative group that believe our soldiers dying in Iraq is divine punishment for our country harboring gays. And, of course, Alan Holmes' response was, well, Dean isn't affiliated with that group. There is no longer a doubt to me that Holmes is nothing more than a paid puppet for Hannity to be beat up on. John, well, John, I'm right with you on that. I think you're absolutely 100% right on that. Alan Holmes is nothing but a punching bag for Hannity. I'm sure he gets paid well to be Hannity's punching bag. I bet he does. 29%er, that's what we got to call him from now, the old 29%er. And folks, again, I want to apologize. I was wrong. Some of you were right. Many of you were right, and I was wrong. I said it wouldn't get under 30%. Now it has. Now the question is, do we get a pool up, award a new card, whoever comes the closest, how low it can get? I don't think it's in our budget. I think we're going to give away a card. It had to be more like a 53 Chevy or something like that that hadn't been restored, by the way. Which reminds me, and it does remind me, this is a listener-supported show, and we need your help. We do, and I'm not kidding. It costs money to keep the show on, and we hope you'll contribute to the program. You can do that via PayPal on our website or good old snail mail at our address that's on the website. So we do hope you'll help out with the program. I hate to mention it every time we're on, but it costs money, and the old piggy bank gets empty real doggone quick around here, and it's not like we've drawn a big salary because we don't draw anything, and we hope you'll help out. There was more talk this week about Iran, and so many the right-wingers seem to be worried sick about their nuclear weapons, their nuclear capability that they're trying to establish. And so, you know, no matter how much the United States works toward an absolute military dominance, we're going to be denied absolute power in a nuclear era. Now, everybody just needs to think about that. It's only logical. This has really been decided by the very nature of nuclear weapons, through the expansion and lots of times the abuse of our super military power. Our country not only failed to secure a no nuclear threat position in a nuclear area, but we've damaged our long term national security interest, and probably, most likely, won't be able to sustain our unprecedented military might because of it. You know, on the surface, the U.S. is a military superpower whose annual military spending has reached the unprecedented sum of $500 billion. That's as much as the rest of the world combined. There's no sense in that. In terms of weaponry, our country possesses both the world's strongest conventional and nuclear arsenals, and that is a phenomenon never seen before in human history. Meanwhile, we've got the Bush administration pressing ahead with the development of new concept weaponry, including practical nuclear weapons. I'd like to know what practical, and that's not a mistake, I didn't mean to say tactical. Practical nuclear weapons. What is a practical nuclear weapon? I don't know. But, you know, you consider his fight for control of outer space, They're working on research and development of a kinetic energy weapon, this digitalized battlefield information and military integration. The U.S. has no match or rivalry whatsoever in today's world in terms of military strength. Absolutely nobody. And the U.S. military advantages, they'll remain in effect for quite a while, quite a period of time yet. But our military might is inevitably going to affect our foreign policy and cast certain bad influence on international relations. And I think the important question here is, has the military superiority brought more security to the country? Has it? Has it intensified the U.S. dominance on international affairs? My answer is probably no. You know, different perspectives lead to different understandings on military superiority, but firstly, there's been a real revolutionary change take place on traditional concept of national security since we got in the nuclear area about, what, six decades ago, and if you doubt that, just look at India and Pakistan. Do either of them possess a powerful military other than nuclear weapons? No. Could either of them fight a decent conventional war? No. No threat to anybody. And, you know, the international community has become more important in the past six decades or so. So no matter what you think of the UN, you can't deny that its presidents, you know, its very presence has helped defend some nations not capable of defending themselves when they've been threatened by an outside force that the international community deems as wrong. And a perfect example of that is Kuwait. And on the contrary, a country of superior military strength, such as the United States, it might not eliminate threats from lesser military powers or terrorists should they fail to live up to international expectations because being the lone superpower, which is exactly what we are now. We were the first to develop and use nuclear weapons. We were the only country to have the technology to actually build them. And in 1945, the U.S. national strength did reach its peak. And we were the only nuke country in the world. But 60 years later, does our country feel safer or not? And the answer is, I think, painfully no. We don't feel safer that we developed this awful, terrible weapon. You know, our nation is very vulnerable to nuclear strikes from all sorts of enemies. You know, Russia, whom we believe no longer has a reason to do so, they could destroy the U.S. in a day easily. Does anybody think they've been totally disarmed? I don't think so. They've still got a nuclear missile stockpile more than capable of obliterating this entire country. And most people believe that China also has the capability to strike us with nukes. But what about some of these other less prominent countries? You know, the U.S. metropolitan territory already suffered low-tech attacks like September 11th. So I really think our country's more vulnerable now than it ever was. And on a global and regional scope, there's more factors that prevent the U.S. from feeling completely safe than ever before. You know, nuclear weapons, all fine and dandy, but due to their nature of just extreme destruction, when they came around, that caused a fundamental change in international relations ever since they first came upon the scene, just because of the capability of mass destruction. Possession of nukes indicates a significant lift in national security guarantee and probably a louder voice in world affairs. And again, remember India and Pakistan. You know, they've bolstered their image tremendously because they've got nuclear weapons now. Even the fact that we're talking about it, I'm talking about it right now. You know, developing nuclear weapons was no simple task, but it was inevitable that other nations would develop them. Once the genie was out of the box at Los Alamos, once a country, any country, got an effective hold of nuclear weapons, relations between new countries would follow a direction of mutual deterrence. The U.S. military superiority is no longer of the utmost importance. we might have a huge military advantage over another country in conventional weapons. Hell, the other country might not even possess any conventional weapons, but if they have nukes, that goes a long way toward evening things up. And when it comes to national security, the most undesirable thing for our country would be a nuke strike, even only once. Even just once against a metropolitan area or overseas military base, deterrence in a nuke era means that a nuke war would never be waged or won. Unlike in conventional wars, there isn't any winner in nuclear warfare. There just isn't. So, in the nuke era, the military imbalance between countries is to a large degree really offset by the possession of nuclear weapons. As a result, no matter how hard the U.S. seeks military supremacy, and we've seeked it to the hilt, it's all the same denied absolute power in a nuclear area, which is really determined by the nature of nuclear weapons. Just think what the Bush administration has done to push nuclear proliferation along. They refuse to even talk to North Korea about nukes. They refuse to talk to Iran about nukes. Now, after seeing what the U.S. did to Iraq, going to war on a complete fabrication for imperialistic reason, does it not follow that Iran and North Korea are going to want the security of having nukes? Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying they ought to have them. I think they definitely should not. However, put yourself in their places. Wouldn't you want to have enough chips on the table to call the other guy's bet? When India broke the anti-proliferation agreement, the U.S. government recently had to give the incentive of cooperation on the peaceful use of nuclear energy. This is a classic example showing that insisting on owning nuclear weapons brings long-term benefits to a country. And the situation is going to remain in which U.S. military superiority doesn't bring supreme security anymore. Not quite the contrary. You know, military supremacy might damage national security in the long run. Then the second question, how does the U.S. ensure security? Like any other country, it depends on defense forces and international cooperation. Diplomacy, something this administration's completely forgot about. You know, our military should no longer be looked at as a means to start a preemptive war when we feel like it. Our military should be seen as a security force just to protect our nation. Department of Defense. You know, 60 years ago, the U.S. was an important initiator of the United Nations. Back then, we still cherished the ideal of secure and human peace through international cooperation. Every nation was supposed to give up a little bit of its own sovereignty so they could contribute to international peace and security for all the nations. But 60 years later, we've lost most of our patience and confidence by overestimating our own strength and trying to be the bully on the block, and by trying to convince the entire world that the United States government is the Lord and Master of the world. And as I mentioned before, military superiority has given our country an upper hand on battlefield, but has also given would-be dictators like Junior Bush the opportunity to use force real easily. Particularly during the recent 10 years, the U.S. has displayed a more serious, very serious inclination to leave UN aside and organize these volunteer alliances. And you know, the overall impact of that is a weakened UN. I really think as the world's most internationalized country, by neglecting or abandoning international organizations such as the UN, the U.S. has to fall back on its own strength and a handful of allies for the same security goals we should enjoy with the entire world community. Instead, we're becoming an outcast. And don't you think for a minute that the Bush administration has not committed a grave error where North Korea is concerned. The entire world now sees that we are not capable of doing anything at all about Kim Jong-il's nuclear project. We don't have the money to do it. We don't have the cooperation of the world to do it. We need both the Bush administration, you know, we need both. And the Bush administration has squandered our money and our good name on the world stage. So we're facing some serious problems, and we don't have a government right now to deal with them. Hope we can work that out this fall. Hope we can put people back in power that want to help this government become great again, to help America become a leader again instead of become a pariah on the world stage. That's where we belong. Well, it's been great to have you with us today. Always enjoyable. Do want to remind you that you've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.